It is. I know the people at Discovery pretty well. They're some pretty good people, and I can't for one second imagine they would catch something really significant, like a snake-like apparition that would appear over a group of people doing a seance in Roswell, New Mexico, and then not air it. So perhaps somebody at the network would like to get hold of me and explain to me why this is not being aired. We'll find out more about what's not being aired in a moment with Joshua, but if anybody at the network would like to get hold of me, I'm Art Bell at AOL.com or Art Bell at Mindspring.com. That's Art Bell, ARTBELL at AOL.com, or more likely at Mindspring.com. Sure would like to hear from Discovery about what it is they're not airing. We'll be right back. Joshua, aside from that incredible snake-like apparition that appeared above the séance, was there anything else in that program that you can think of that would have caused them to make a decision not to air?
Well, the only thing that I was told by the producer director is that they felt that the fact everybody present agreed that something paranormal happened did not seem objective enough for Discovery Channel. But I mean, that's the only thing that I've been told, and which is kind of ironic because I mean, you would hope that when Discovery puts together, and by the way, this was a Discovery project. This was not something somebody came up with and pitched to Discovery. I mean, this came from Discovery originally. We had Discovery producers in the field on the scene with us the whole time, overseeing the production. There were producers there when this happened. You would think that given those circumstances, they would say, okay, we put together a team of people here who have experienced something extraordinary, and that gives us all the more reason to air it. But then the only thing that I heard afterward was that they figured that since everybody there agreed something paranormal had occurred, that it seemed to jeopardize the objectivity of the event.
That doesn't make sense to me, Joshua. I mean, if everybody agreed and they caught it on a high-def camera, then they had, it seems to me, that met their objectives, period. And so that's not subjective at all. They had evidence.
You know, in fact, at least I personally have a copy of the footage. I mean, Jim Castle, the guy who directed this thing, sent me a copy, and he'd probably be happy to send you a copy as well.
Well, I'd be happy to receive a copy.
Well, oh.
All right, look, let's move on. Over the years on this program, we've discussed, lake monsters, Bigfoot extensively. I've interviewed people who have had big encounters with Bigfoot. Thank you very much, Mothman, all the rest of them. These sort of I don't know, somewhere between mythical and paranormal creatures. Is there any distinction in your mind between them and between the sighting of ghosts and other paranormal phenomena, or is it all in the same bailiwick?
Well, the way I view this particular subject, and by the way, I know a lot of cryptozoologists. I know Lauren Coleman personally, for example. He's spoken at conferences, and I've spoken along with him at conferences, and I have enormous respect for people who are really diligent and looking at the physical evidence, who feel that these are perfectly normal biological organic creatures. However, I don't see anything in our knowledge of the scientific aspect of energy and biology and so on that should lead us to believe that life forms can only exist within the realm that you and I consider physical. And keep in mind, physicality itself is relative. Basically, what physical means is that two forms are oscillating at a frequency similar enough so that they are able to resist each other. And so, therefore, all it takes is a slight increase or decrease in the frequency of one or the other in order to create this physical slash non-physical relationship where the two do not interact. And so physicality.
Boy, I'll buy that one, buddy. Sure buy that one. In fact, in the first hour, I don't know if you caught it, we talked briefly about this phenomena known as shadow people or shadow beings, if you will.
Yeah.
And I've thought for some time that the more modern phenomena of staring at computer screens, which of course operate at a different refresh rate, eventually sort of retrain the brain after hours to see at a slightly different vibrational rate and allow human beings to see these things that are normally not seen in our physical dimension.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point because, you know, you have that, flash frame sort of rate or whatever they call it, I forget the actual term, that determines the rate basically at which your eyes are able to perceive other frequencies. It's no different than, say, turning on
that's
a fan.
Right.
You can't see the fan blades when they're moving at a certain rate because they are going too fast for your brain to perceive. But if you turn on a strobe light, for example, strobe light isolates them at a frequency that your brain can't perceive, and that may be why that the shutter speed on a camera determines if you can see into these frequencies. And so there is no reason scientifically to believe that life forms cannot exist at frequencies that are non-physical to us. Look at radio waves. We can't see them, we can't feel them, but they are real, they are tangible, they carry information, and so on. When it comes to something like Bigfoot or Mothman or some of these creatures, before we get into the idea that these may, in fact, perhaps be ghosts of creatures that are extinct or something like that, because I mentioned dinosaur ghosts earlier,
mm-hmm.
I feel that when these creatures are present at our frequency, they are entirely tangible to us. I mean, they leave footprints, they leave hairs and other physical traces, but they don't stick around long enough for us to have the ultimate specimen to prove that they are always in our realm. Because I do feel like when people say, I've seen this creature, or when they collect samples, I think those people are being honest and they have actually seen something physical. But if there is a, let's say, 1,000-pound, 8-foot-tall, hairy thing running around this country,
mm-hmm.
and I can understand if it's way out in the middle of the jungle or in the middle of the Pacific Northwest, but we have reports of these creatures in all 50 states every year.
That's right.
There should be more evidence. There should be more hair. There should be more footprints. There should be more of an impact on the ecology of the system.
I could not agree with you more. And so then perhaps for only short periods, are they able to, in essence, be in this dimension, affecting physicality in this dimension? In other words, leaving footprints and that sort of thing. And that might account for why we suddenly see those footprints end as though the thing had just gone straight up into the air or something.
Yeah, perfect example. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, cryptozoologists hate it when you talk like that. But you know,
I know.
Yeah, that's what the evidence indicates. Yeah.
Is there any indication, whether it's a ghost or whether it's one of these creatures that we're now talking about, how the apparitions actually are able to manifest?
Well, look at the Mothman, for example. The Mothman sightings climaxed leading up to a big event, the collapse of the Silver Bridge. The sightings started out slow and they picked up in speed. And of course, we always have difficulty evaluating that sort of thing because the media can step in and accelerate the coverage, and you never know how much of it is being implanted in people's minds. But without going down that road, we know that altogether there were a few sightings in the beginning, and they became more and more frequent, and it led up to this major disaster, the collapse of the Silver Bridge, where 40-some people died, I think. And then after that, the sightings virtually disappeared or dwindled altogether slowly over time. So maybe There is, well, we know for a fact there is an energy environment that surrounds this planet that exists at a certain frequency. I mean, we know about the Schumann resonance, for example. Mm-hmm. If you want to look at it globally, based upon how lightning discharges are hitting the planet and all this kind of stuff, maybe when there is a big change that is about to occur on the planet, before it happens physically, it first happens in the energy environment, or at very least, that's where the first traces of it are. And when these shifts begin to occur in the energy environment, these creatures that live in the realm just are outside of the one that we consider physical, mm-hmm. are able to interact with us, either because, let's say, their frequency is lowered, or ours is heightened, or vice versa. But for some reason, there is this shift in frequency at these critical points that allows the frequencies to converge closer together. And so for this limited window, we are able to experience each other in a physical way. And then finally, the big discharge occurs, an earthquake happens, or some disaster happens. In fact, just last year, there was a minor earthquake here in western North Carolina, where I live, and afterward, people started calling me and telling me about seeing these large winged beings in the air only minutes before the earthquake occurred. And after that discharge happens and everything settles, well, then... we don't see them anymore because they go back into their realm. And
well, that's because there was an electromagnetic disturbance associated with the earthquake. There usually is.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder, I'm going to go way out on a limb right now, but if you look at the George Meeks research, one has to wonder, that, of course, was with EVP, but one has to wonder if there isn't something that could be done on this side, or perhaps even, Joshua, on the other side, or perhaps on both sides, that would eventually enable a mixing of the two sides, an ongoing communication, or even better, movement on both sides, if you follow me. In other words, some scientific breakthrough that would allow the veil to be dropped.
Yes, that is what we have to achieve. And that is why that, you see, so far when it comes to the EVP-type technology you were talking about earlier, what they have done essentially is create a bunch of white noise so that these are sort of free-floating building blocks that hopefully any entity out there will sort of be able to snatch onto and shape into a form that is able to communicate like a voice or something.
Well, specifically in the Meeks case, what they did was, it was kind of like white noise. And the idea was that the entity on the other side, being unable to vocalize, could instead find a way to modulate this white noise in a way that would make it vocal and make us able to actually hear something, to understand something.
Yeah, it's like giving it an electronic voice box to work
with. That's right. That's right, exactly.
But you see, that is only the first step. As you were suggesting, the next step is now to figure out how do we change the frequency of this realm and that realm so that our frequencies converge closer together so that voice box, so to speak, will become more useful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have to look at wide-scale manipulation of the frequency. It almost reminds you of something like the Philadelphia experiment or some of these Tesla-type experiments where you create something that resonates the entire piece of property itself so that that chunk of space-time mm-hmm. is able to shift in a similar fashion to what may happen naturally at these places such as Point Pleasant, West Virginia, before some big event occurs. And the problem is, if we ever are able to create the technology to do that, and we may already have, frankly, well, then we don't really know how detrimental this could be altogether.
That's right.
To our well-being by
resonating.
No,
we don't. We don't. You know, it's opening a door, is what it's doing, Joshua. It's opening swinging it wide open, in fact. And so, right, I have no idea whether that would be a good or a bad thing. I think the possibilities are probably about equal.
Yeah, I would say so, because, you know, the Earth itself is such a dynamic, complex machine with so many variables. Few people seem to realize that. We have this false perception of how huge and complex the Earth is because of modern technology. We can go instantly to a reporter anywhere or see all these satellite images, and it makes the Earth seem very small. But in fact, the Earth is so huge and complex, I think that these things do happen all the time on the Earth naturally. But when you're talking about producing a machine that allows us to manipulate the Earth's environment, frankly, in order to cause that convergence between our realm and mm-hmm. another dimension, it's going to warp time, it's going to change gravity, and in a way, time itself is the core of this whole situation, because what more perfectly captures the mystery of ghostly phenomena than time itself? If you see a ghost, you have this sense that you're looking at the past, or in some cases, you're looking into the future, depending on the situation. And so it makes you feel like that if we had a machine that was able to withstand certain forces and travel at certain speeds and so on, well, we have this idea we could travel through time physically. Well, we don't have a machine like that so far. But mentally, we may have that ability. I mean, we don't understand the power of the mind. And so it may very well be that the mind is at this point sometimes able to achieve these states that we still cannot achieve with our physical technology. And if we were able to achieve it, might be so reckless with it that we would either destroy ourselves or make ourselves insane if you are the experimenter who was there in the midst of it. And I think I've seen that happen to people.
Well, it may be that such a machine is not as impossible as it might seem on the face of it. In other words, if we are able to begin to affect the vibrational state of the brain with nothing more than a computer monitor, then using that line of reasoning, it might be that both sight, sound, frequency, and some other factors could be combined in some sort of machine that would in fact change a certain area into, let's see, I'm trying to say to open that door we're talking about, such a machine might not be so impossible.
Well, you know, even though people like you and myself are very technically minded, we like wires, we like buttons, we like electricity, for thousands of years, people have been trying to achieve the same effect by using something like the psychomantium, a uh-huh. perfectly natural effect, which is based upon something similar to scrying, where a person gazes into a mirror or That's some right. other reflective surface mm-hmm. and is able to create these psychic, if you will, impressions using the mental state. And I've had people warn me strongly against doing that as well. But one thing that I find intriguing about this idea that we might be able to accomplish mentally what we would like to accomplish technically is that when you look into a mirror and you are basically seeing your own eyes, well, that is, in a sense, infinity. And we know that infinity is really the key to the most complex mysteries of all. I mean, that's what it's all really about, infinity. There is no beginning, there is no end. And you would not believe how many times I go into haunted houses, and after about 5 minutes of walking around, I enter a room where there is a mirror facing a mirror. And you get that infinite tunnel of image within image within image. Mm-hmm. Now, mirrors, of course, are designed to reflect electromagnetism, i.e. light. So it may be that the real key to this whole situation in that sense is something to do with this infinite loop of energy being reflected back and forth, and that's when it starts getting really complex.
Mm-hmm. Is it true, Joshua, that people like yourself, researchers, are being surveilled by the government?
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yeah.
Hold it. Hold
okay.
It right there, Joshua. That's a great little tease, and that's what we do here at the Breakpoint. So these researchers, people like Joshua, are being surveilled by our government. I wonder specifically by what agency of the government and why. From Manila in the Philippines, Southeast Asia, just about the opposite side of the world from most of you out there, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. You are. A good afternoon to you. It's currently about, 3:35 or so in the afternoon in Manila, the Philippines. I'm speaking with Joshua Warren, and we're talking about ghosts specifically in a moment. We're talking about our government surveillance of researchers like Joshua Warren. Now, let's think about that a little bit. Certainly, our government, you know, the guys with the agencies that just have initials, pretty much. There's nothing I would think that Joshua would know that they need to find out about. So the only thing I can imagine the government would be interested in would be what people like Joshua might stumble into, something perhaps our government already knows about. We'll ask in a moment. Just taking a very small step backwards, Susie in Petaluma, California says, Joshua was talking about the fan blade and shutter speeds on camera, right? This may be the reason for the common phenomena of finding something ghost-like in a photograph that supposedly wasn't there when it was taken. Are we in a ghost soup all the time and don't know it? I'll tell you something interesting. I got an email concerning a number of passengers on an airliner. On an aircraft, I guess. I don't know that it was an airliner. On an aircraft who took photographs of something or another, and each and every one of the photographs, it was several people and several cameras, caught exactly the same lights in formation following the aircraft. Now, these lights were not actually seen by the people on the aircraft nor the people taking the photographs until... The pictures were either developed or simply shown after being, you know, the word exposed doesn't apply to the digital world. But anyway, it showed up equally well on all of the cameras, but not to the naked eye, only to the cameras. And I'm working on that story right now. I wasn't really going to mention it tonight, but it seems to fit in. Joshua?
Yeah, that's a perfect example because our team has been in places before where paranormal activity occurs. We have three or four cameras set up. We have three or four people. Mm-hmm. Something anomalous happens, and each camera captures something different, and each person experiences something different. And talking about questioning reality, I mean, that makes you really question what is real and what is not. And the fact of the matter is there is no correct perception of reality. Indeed, cameras are capable of capturing things that we cannot see with our naked eyes, for one thing, because of shutter speed. Mm-hmm. And secondly, because that especially digital cameras are all able to see somewhat into the infrared realm. And it seems like that so many of these paranormal anomalies are within the infrared, but that may only be because that our digital technology is currently able to capture infrared easily. We don't have digital cameras readily available that can capture into the UV realm, and that's something mm-hmm. our team is working closer toward, trying to see what is in the UV realm that might be just as extraordinary as what we see in the infrared. But that's absolutely true. Cameras are able to perceive things that the naked eye cannot.
Mm-hmm. The Bigelow Ranch, I guess you're probably familiar with Bob Bigelow, right? He's now in aerospace, launched a spacecraft, but he was very much into paranormal research. And at his ranch, using night vision equipment, some very credible people that I've interviewed were able to actually view an opening, some sort of dimensional opening, and something crawling through it. I know this sounds strange as hell, but it's true, and it was seen by a number of people. And anyway, look, I want to get back to this surveillance business. I started thinking about that. Why would our government surveil somebody like you? What would they be interested in? Well, probably nothing that they don't already know. In other words, they've done a lot of work in this area, so they must already know something. What they must be concerned about, Joshua, is that one of you all will discover something they already know that they don't want made public.
Well, in my experience, government agencies, and by the way, it's not directly the government. Instead, it is private businesses, private corporations that are contracted with the government who are doing the real research because they are protected by privacy rights that public agencies don't have.
It's still the government, though. I mean, remember America.
Yeah, exactly. It all boils down to how you define things technically. And, you know, definition is everything.
Yeah.
But they don't really seem to care so much about ghost research. It's when you start looking into outer space and you start looking at this alien phenomenon and how that extraterrestrial things may actually manifest using the manipulation of energy. That's when the government really starts becoming intrigued, and especially when you start looking into the moon. Because I have this impression, based upon my own experiences, that we all look up every day at the moon. We see this bright glowing orb above we're all familiar with, and we sort of blow it off because we're so used to it. But there is something going on with the moon. I don't know necessarily if it is of a terrestrial or extraterrestrial nature, but there is sufficient reason to believe that there are secret projects taking place on the moon based, if nothing else, on the fact that that's when they really start paying attention to you.
Well, it could well be, Joshua, but I'm not sure there's, at the end of the day, that much difference between the kind of paranormal research you're doing and research on aliens. In other words, aliens seem to manifest, appear, disappear, be able to do things that we would consider to be paranormal, much in the same way a ghost does. So I don't know that there's a lot of difference. I mean, whether we call it an alien spirit or we call it a ghost, they're just words, Joshua.
Well, you hit the nail on the head there, because based upon the research that I have done, there is no huge difference between the way that a ghost may manifest and how something like an alien intelligence manifests, because the same thing is happening. There is this manipulation of the frequencies taking place between what we consider non-physical and physical. And given that, if you consider that the government is simply composed of people who are categorizing things in terms of prioritization, it makes sense that they would actually start increasing surveillance when you start touching on something that has relevance to a project they're actually working on, such as something related to extraterrestrials. But in essence, you're absolutely right. There is no great difference, from what I've seen, between how these potential extraterrestrial intelligences may be manifesting and how a ghost makes that transition from one realm to the other.
Hear, hear. Have you been aware of any surveillance of yourself at any point?
Absolutely, yes.
Give me an example, please.
Yeah, I have actually had government agents show up at my house. And there are some details that I cannot go into for certain privacy reasons. But basically, I never experienced this sort of government surveillance presence until I started seriously investigating that connection between the possibility of extraterrestrial manifestations and what's happening on the moon. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I feel that when I say government agents have appeared at my house, I mean, men have shown up not only at my house but at my neighbors' homes, asking questions. I've told people for a long time that I had weird stuff happening on my phone line, and then we have all this coming out about the Bush administration tapping phone lines, and I don't think there's anything unique about that. I think governments have probably always done that. But you can't help but become paranoid after you get to the point to where not only do you have strangers showing up around your house asking questions, but also...
Oh, no, that'll do it. Paranoia will come quite easily with people talking to your neighbors, interviewing your neighbors, asking about you. Do you recall any of the specific questions they asked about you?
Well, for the most part, it boils down to issues such as, you know, who is this person in terms of his research? How stable is he mentally? I think that's the big thing. Psychologically, they ask questions such as, do you see him doing anything unusual at night? Because I'm sort of a night owl, you know. Obviously, you're in another part of the world, but right now it's approaching 4 a.m. here on the East Coast.
Yes.
They ask questions from a psychological perspective, and so even if there's this perception that a person like myself may be, you know, some wacko, why should they care about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not doing anything that should be threatening to the national security. I'm simply questioning these concepts about how extraterrestrial or other types of entities may manifest here on Earth. And so it is possible that they simply have a whole department which is looking at the psychological aspects of researchers out there like myself. For some reason that I don't know about, that has no relationship to any reality regarding the practicality of these other beings or intelligences.
That could be. Let me ask you this. Is there anything about the moon that you know that we should know? You brought up the moon, so let's go there.
Well, for about the past 15 years, I have been mentored by a man named Charles Yost, who worked for NASA. He actually died last year, and so I feel much more willing to talk about certain things that I wouldn't have before that. I worked with him on projects that I felt had some elements that I wouldn't have discussed prior to his death. He's actually in the NASA Hall of Fame for being an inventor of Tempur-Pedic memory foam. And not too long before he died, he gave me some footage that NASA had showing, and I think this was from Apollo 8. This is on my website, lemurteam.com, where there is a craft flying over the surface of the moon, and at one point, something that looks very much like a tower sticking up out of the moon is visible. And as the camera flies over, this thing shifts perspective, and right as the camera is about to pass over top of it, this what appears to be something like a puff of smoke is ejected from this tower.
Uh-huh. Now, right, a lot of people are going to want to see this, so let me stop and say it's www.lemur, that's L-E-M-U-R, team, T-E-A-M, .com, right?
That's right. And
a lot of people are going to be on the way to that website right now. How do they get to the clip you're talking about?
Well, there's a section there that says ghost hunting and more.
Right.
And if you click on that, I think there's a heading something like space mysteries or something like that, where we have this footage posted. And, you know, it's funny. I started out just as a journalist collecting ghost stories, and I had years and years of experience in seeing how people respond to that. And then once I posted this footage, and I simply raised the question of what is this, you would not believe that the people who started bombarding my sites and our discussion board every day with truly venomous reactions, saying, you know,
really, really,
Yeah, I mean, saying anything they could to possibly discredit our work when I have not made any claims whatsoever about what this is. All I've said is, here's the footage.
What is it?
What is it? And we're talking about people who are posting virtually 24 hours a day. Now, I don't think the average person out there trying to make a living in this country is able to sit there on a computer and post these highly articulate arguments to every single thing you put out there 24 hours a day. It almost seems like that there is some sort of orchestration out there amongst a group of extremely intelligent people who are doing everything they can to cast doubt upon anything they feel that you are insinuating in terms of a mystery. And I have never seen such a response, so much arrogance, so much condescension toward asking questions as I have seen since I started asking questions about the moon in particular. And recently, now we have this information coming out about, you know, 698 boxes of the footage from the Apollo mission with the footage have just mysteriously vanished.
Gone.
And then, you know, you go back to Roswell and all the outgoing messages from the Roswell base have mysteriously vanished.
Vanished.
There is something happening here, and I don't pretend to know what it is. And I can't say directly that it's aliens. I've never seen an alien. I have seen so many people comment upon the fact that, you know, they have seen organisms from some extraterrestrial or of extraterrestrial origin, that I think that there is probably some credibility there. But whether or not it's extraterrestrial or terrestrial, the moon right now is in a position where it is being used as a tool to control this planet based upon what I have seen. And why wouldn't it be? I mean, look at how important satellites in general are. The moon is the ultimate satellite. And, you know, just recently, we not only have, you know, George Bush saying we're going to go back to the moon, and we have the Russians saying we're going to put a base on the moon, and the Chinese people saying we're going to put a base on the moon. Well, there are also these reports coming out about helium-3, which is this plentiful substance on the moon that
That's
aids
correct.
Fusion reactions that could solve the energy crisis for hundreds, if not over 1,000 years. And so it may be that it's based solely upon the energy crisis, and I feel like all these big secrets that the government is interested in boils down to energy, and that's why right now, you know, we are in such a dire situation, because most people agree that energy needs are a big component of why we're at war right now.
Well, as you know, there are many people who have said there are things on the moon that have been hidden from us, from large glass crystalline structures that Richard C. Hoagland and others have talked about, to many other things. There are those who even suggest the soul, that there's some sort of repeater that collects souls on the moon. I mean, there's all kinds of lore about the moon, and there is some evidence that there may be something on the moon that they don't want us to know about. You believe that?
Oh, absolutely. At this point, you know, it's funny. If you are the kind of person who says, I am never going to form an opinion until I know something 100%, well, then you may as well just keep your mouth shut and never say anything, because you're never going to know anything 100%. That's not the nature of reality. For all we know, this whole experience is just some kind of dream. You know, how do you know the difference between the two? Because a dream seems realistic. But if you are the kind of person who realizes, okay, there comes a certain point. Okay, you there, Art?
I'm right here.
Okay,
yeah.
I just heard myself talking to myself.
I know. I heard the same thing. It was some sort of glitch back there. That's all right.
Okay. Maybe it is a dream. But anyway, if you're the kind of person who realizes that you're never going to have all of the information, and so at some point you may as well form an opinion, and you're not afraid to be wrong if you are indeed wrong, well, so be it. I, at this point, have formed the opinion that there is something extremely significant happening on the moon that they are keeping secret from us, and this is exactly the kind of thing that they don't want us talking about right now.
Hmm. Well, then you're liable to find somebody else at your door or one of your neighbor's doors. I have no idea what it is either, but it does seem that there's some sort of mystery connected with the moon. And, of course, we did go there now a long time ago, and we haven't exactly we've had some rhetoric, but we haven't exactly seen big steps toward going back to the moon. And one has to wonder what's going to happen when the, well, for example, the Chinese get to the moon. Hold tight, Joshua. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to open the phone lines and allow all of you to ask Joshua Warren questions, whether it would be about entities that you have seen, experiences you have had, or much of what he's talked about, even right down to and including surveillance from our government or something that ought not be on the moon that we've not yet been told about, but is probably there. Any and all of that is fair game when we return from Manila in the Philippines. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.